Now, we have a little bit of a challenge ahead of us because we did not meet for Parshas Vayigash and we did not meet for Parshas Miketz. And we did meet for Vayeshev, in which we introduced we introduced our great leader Yosef HaTzadik, and we talked and we're learning according to the approach and comments of Rabbi Dessler in Michtam Eliyahu. So far this year, we're going strong with him, and he gave us a very important and fundamental understanding of the role of Yaakov as a patriarch, and the role of Yosef as not a patriarch, but as a yesod, a foundation person who took the work of Yaakov and continued it, creating a foundation for the Jewish people to multiply and to grow. He's not a patriarch in the sense that he did not innovate a new midah, a new attribute, as Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov did. He took the attribute of Yaakov, of Emes, and he went with it, and he created an atmosphere for the Jewish people to thrive in Egypt. Now, the truth is that the story of Yaakov and Yosef continues through all these parshios, Miketz, Vayigash, Vayechi. But how do we encapsulate three parshios of Rabbi Dessler, of all commentators, into one class? And God forbid, in his yeshiva, I'm sure they didn't have midwinter break. But there is no entry in the parsha of Miketz, nor in the parsha of Vayechi, in his book. All there is Vayigash. So we only have really one chapter of the book to deal with, and it's really focused on Vayigash. So I'd like to share those words with you today. It's still Parshas Vayechi, for the record, but we are going to be studying some of the thoughts and ideas of Rav Dessler as he presents them in Parshas Vayigash. Now the question is, what was on Yaakov and Yosef's minds at this time? Believe me, what's on their minds, not what we think is on their minds. We think, that's why they came down to Egypt, to get food. So, well, we just mentioned in our chit-chat before that was not an issue. Because as soon as Yaakov came down to Egypt, the famine abated. So what was on their minds? And Rav Dessler says that was on their minds was the next 200 and some years. What's going to be with the Jewish people, especially after they're gone? Yaakov arrives in Egypt at age 130. He lives 17 years, and he passes away at the age of 147, which was significantly less than the lifespan of both his father and grandfather. Abraham lived to 175, and Yitzchak to 180. Yaakov, only 147. In fact, he kind of complained that his life was short, and according to the sages, he actually lost those years because he complained. But that's not our discussion.
People think that he had to fight with the angel that took away some of his
youth. Okay, that's another interpretation. Believe me, he wasn't kvetching like we kvetch. Yosef was 30 when he started ruling as the viceroy. He lived till 110. And at the end of the Parsha Vayechi, Yosef passes away. So, we're talking about, let's say, Yaakov and his brothers came 10 years, let's say, roughly 10 years after Yosef did. No, excuse me. Yosef came 10 years after he rose to his position, 7 years, 9, 10 years. So we're talking about that Yaakov and Yosef were in one of the two was in position while the Jews settled and multiplied in Egypt for roughly 80 years. That means Yosef was a king who reigned for 80 years. That's the longest of any Jewish king ever. In all through the period of the prophets and the kings, nobody ruled for that long. Yosef was the first and the longest ruling Jewish king, Melech. But that was, alright, so that's a sum total of 80 years. The Jewish people continued in Egypt for another 140 years from the time they arrived. What was going to be with them? You know, we know the end of the story. The end of the story is in Shemos that they multiplied in great numbers. In that period of time, they went from 70 souls to how many?
Thousands.
600,000 men.
6 million people.
Higher.
7 million.
They 600,000 men, approximately 3 million left. At the Exodus. But the Torah tells us that was only one-fifth of the population. V'chamushim alu b'nei Yisrael me'eretz Mitzrayim, it says in Parshas B'Shalach, which one interpretation is one-fifth. So that means they had escalated to the population of 15 million. 15 million sons of Abraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. And what state were they in? Well, only one-fifth left. That means, from a spiritual perspective, 80% did not merit redemption. And not meriting redemption means that there wasn't enough distinction between them and their Egyptian counterparts to justify their exodus. So that means the Jewish people, during the course of 140 years, after the passing of Yaakov and Yosef, the great pillars fell spiritually very much. And not surprising, because the Egyptian culture was the worst of all. Rav Dessler speaks about Esav being the personification of the Satan, but he looks at Egypt as being the society, the civilization, which perpetuated the Satan's work. And the Torah describes the Egyptians as steeped in immorality and in all kinds of sorcery and idol worship, as we see what they did. I mean, they were the Nazis of their time. Yimach Shemo. So that's what was on Yaakov and Yosef's mind. What is going to be with our children? And they didn't just sit down and worry. They asked the questions, what can we do while we're here to prepare them and to strengthen, build up their immunity to the terrible diseases that they will be exposed to in Egypt? And that is the theme of Parshas Vayigash, according to Rav Dessler, is the Hachonos Legolos Mitzrayim, preparation for the exile in Egypt. So, he has one section on what Yaakov did to prepare the nation, and another section on what Yosef did to prepare the nation. And then the third section is on the results of those preparations. What do we mean by preparations? So, Yaakov and Yosef is very... this was meaningful to me because we had discussed in the previous lesson, we had discussed the difference between Yaakov's approach and Yosef's approach. If you recall, Rav Dessler says that Yaakov in his lifetime spent years living with Laban, you know, who was himself an evil person, a dishonest person, a conniving person, and Yaakov became stronger and stronger in his meat of emes, of truth. And he had, living in this world, he had it down to a science. You know, he knew how to live with dishonest people and be honest. He knew how to how to maintain his identity and his... He could do that. And he came back, and he had his one last wrestling with the Tsar of Esav, with the angel of Esav, his real archenemy, and he was undefeated by the end of the night. And what happened at the end of that night? He received his diploma. The diploma said, your name is now Yisrael, which means you have now graduated from Olam Hazeh. This is what Rav Dessler said. You have now led a successful life. You have overcome all obstacles, all tests. You have now accomplished what you were set out to accomplish in this world. You're now ready to enter into Olam Haba. But it's not time, because we still need you here for everybody else. But that's really what it meant, that he became Yisrael. So in his mind, he's now kind of living in a different world. But the Jewish people are not in a different world. His children are not in a different world. His children still have to grapple with the test of this world. And therefore, that's what Yosef filled in. Yosef became the Hemsheikh. Yosef became the continuation of Yaakov. Not Yisroel. Of Yaakov. Yosef took the Midah of Emes, and he harnessed that. He absorbed it totally with his total being. He was practically a mirror image of his father. And he said, I'm going to take this character and I'm going to show the people how they can live in this world with the Bida of Emes. So here we have these two great figures. Yisroel, who has transcended into the future, is transcended into the other world, and at the same time, Yosef, who is continuing the work of his father in Olam Hazeh. So, looking at Vayigash, and these, what Rabbi Dessler calls the preparations, it's perfect. The preparations of Yaakov were preparations in terms of imbuing his children with Olam Haba type of visions, and Yosef's preparations were in the area of Olam Hazeh, of this world. And I will now tell you what Rav Dessler says here in detail. Yaakov's preparations were three. You'll see what I mean about the this world versus next world. Yaakov, the first preparation that he did was that he transformed his children along with him. What are we called? What is the most common phrase used to depict the Jewish people?
B'nei Yisrael.
B'nei Yisrael. I believe this is the first time it's mentioned, but in Vayigash, it says, in Parak Memvav Pasuk Hei, Vayokam Yaakov mi Be'er Shava, Vayisu B'nei Yisrael es Yaakov Avihem, V'yes Tapom, V'yes Neshehem, V'agolos, Asher Sholach Paro Laseis Ozo. So Jacob arose from Beersheba. This is his departure from Israel to go to Egypt. The sons of Israel transported Jacob their father. The sons of Israel transported Jacob their father, as well as their young children and wives, in the wagons which Pharaoh had sent to transport him. It's interesting. The sons of Israel. Why not the sons of Yaakov? So says Rav Dessler, this is where they become the sons of Israel. And Yaakov instructs them, before we go down to Mitzrayim, you have to know something. You are going to live in this world. Boy, are you going to find yourself in the thick of it. But you should know something. You are really the children of Yisrael. You are the children of the transcendent Jews who have a destiny of vanquishing evil, of holding off that wrestling match with the angel of Esav. You have that as your destiny. If you don't know that, if you don't know what your destiny is, if you don't know that there will come a future, that all of this will be just a passing shadow, and your destiny is to sit with the Divine Presence in Olam Haba, and that evil is just a tool of God. You will not make it through the Egyptian exile. You have to go into Egypt, into the exile, knowing that you are B'nai Yisrael, that you are the people of the spiritual destiny. That was the first point of preparation. And clearly in a nothing to do with, you know, practical modus operandi, but it was in terms of implanting in them a vision of Olam Haba. The second thing, which is related, is quoted by in the name of Sephorno. It says that Yaakov, they went together with Yaakov. Okay, Vayakam, Vayisu b'nei Yisrael, Siyakov Aviyam, they lifted up their father, and they did not go into Egypt by themselves, they went with him. What does it mean they went with him? So the Sephorno says that when he went, Shebelechto el Simchaso, he went to his, I'm not sure how to translate this, he went towards his joy. Acharei she'avru alav kol atzaros she'avru, after he had passed through all of his trials and tribulations. Orem ma she'yikro lo be'ekev uv'yachris hayamim, he taught them what would occur at the end of days. But the point here is that Yaakov had a sense of joy about him. Yaakov, as we said before, had transcended. Nothing that could occur from this point on could get him down. He had what we call Hisromamus Hanefesh, the exalted soul.
After he knows that Yosef is alive.
Give me when Joseph,
well,
when Jacob.
That's what it says. It does say that. But even though the pasuk is before, he did. I don't know if it's only because of that. Yeah.
Before Jacob came to Egypt, he did not know that Joseph was alive.
No, he heard about it. Yeah, that's right. He heard about it. He already knew. Yes, he already knew. He already knew, and therefore he didn't see him. He knew he was alive. That filled him with joy.
Right.
And it was this joy of ultimate victory that he carried with him. This was the second tool of preparation that he imparted to his children. An exalted soul. Which is an offshoot of the first thing. The first thing is we have a vision of the future. But a person could have a vision of the future and still be, you know, totally downcast about the present. But Yaakov had already transcended that as well. And he was so full of the spirit of victory, of spiritual victory, that nothing could get him down. And that's what he implanted to the Jewish people. Again, to say, if you don't have this exaltedness of the soul, if you do not have the ability to see through all the dark clouds and to feel the joy of our destiny, you will not make it through the exile. So point number one is the knowledge that of the future destiny. Point number two is translating that into a sense of being right now, sense of well-being and joy that will hold up to any eventual occurrences. And the third thing he gave us is when he encountered Yosef. There's a very well-known scene when the two are reunited, and kind of something seems to be amiss, because it says Vayeser Yosef Merkavto, this is in Perek Memvav Pasuk Chav Tes 29, Yosef harnessed his chariot, he went up to meet Israel his father in Goshen. Vayera Elov Vayipol Al Tavarov Vayefk Al Tavarov Od, he appeared before him, fell on his neck, and he wept on his neck excessively. These two people meeting, father and son, both been separated for the same amount of time, both with equal love for one another. And yet, there's only one actor here. The other person is passive. Yosef is falling on his father's neck. Yosef is weeping. What's Yaakov doing at this time? Famous Rashi quoting the Midrash. And Yaakov, what was he doing? Ayakorei Shema. He was reading the Shema. Fine time to pick to read the Shema when you're reunited with your son after 22 years. Say hello first. Give him a kiss. Give him a hug. So this, you know, obviously needs some explanation. But Rav Dessler said is that, you know, a person has so much love, and he could have been filled and expressed, he was filled with, but he could have expressed his love to his son at this moment, but he focused rather on a higher love, a love that he had with Hashem. V'yohavta et Hashem Elokecha b'chol levavcha v'chol nafshecha u'v'chol me'odecha. Love Hashem with all your heart and your soul, and indeed your life. And certainly of your possessions. Yaakov taught us that the highest expression of love, the highest feeling of love, has to be reserved for Hashem. And once again, without that, we won't make it through the exile. That's what it means. This is a hachana. This is a preparation for the exile in Egypt. And this is how Yaakov taught us and imparted it to us. He created the possibility for a human being to have love of God that's stronger than the love of his own flesh and blood. There's a statement I once heard from Rav Shimon Schwab, blessed memory, that one thing, I don't know if he used to say this or he used to just convey it by his actions, that he used to, but I think he used to say to his children when they were young, he says, "I love you more than you can ever know," to his children. "You are the love of my life, but I love God more. I love Hashem more." This is what he used to teach his children. And this is what Yaakov, he learned this from Yaakov. And again, that is not just something nice to say about Yaakov. This is what we call a hechana, a necessary tool for us, for the Jewish people at that time, these things. Without that fixation on our destiny, without the Hisromimus HaNefesh, the sense of transcendence and joy, no matter what happens to us, like the stories that we've heard about the heroic survivors of the, or not even the survivors, those that perished in concentration camps, how they would sit around on a Yom Tov, they would try to remember the Jewish holidays, and when it was time for a holiday, they would sing and they would dance and they would celebrate in the darkest hours, because they had this undistinguishable flame, this Hisromimus HaNefesh, this exaltedness of the soul, which they learned from Yaakov, and the third thing, which is this love of God, which is higher than all loves. This is Yaakov's preparation for the Gullus, for the exile. Yosef, he also made preparations for the exile, also to give advantage and strength for those who would follow him. And he did so in a different realm. He did so in the realm of the here and now, the worldly existence. The primary vehicle of his being able to do that is by how did he get to that point? Because of his position as the viceroy of Egypt. This is how he was able to prepare for his brothers in many ways. First of all, the simple one is that he provided food for everybody, including came, the famine was over. So what did he accomplish through his position? He accomplished that he amassed all of the wealth of Egypt, as it discusses at the end of Parshas Vayigash, that he used to sell the grain, and people would come and they would buy, and it didn't matter who you were, you had to buy, and if you ran out of money, then you'd have to give your possessions, your land. And another thing that he did was he got Goshen for the brothers. Okay, that's another good one, that he arranged for them to live in a separate place so that they would not be living next door to the Egyptians.
But he didn't get to keep any of that money. That all went to the Pharaoh, didn't it?
Well, Rav Dessler says that because when the Jews left Egypt, they took a lot of this wealth with them.
Because it belonged to Pharaoh.
Right.
Rather than the people.
Because it belonged to Pharaoh. Right. Right. So, in other words, Yosef accomplished that the brothers should leave with this great wealth that Hashem had promised Abraham. So that was also a preparation for their ultimate exile. But it also is stated that what Yosef did was in chapter Mem Zayin Pasuk Chaf Aleph, V'yes ha'om he'evir oso le'orim mikzei gvul mitzrayim v'yad kotzeyu. As for the nation, he resettled it by cities from one end of Egypt's borders to the other. That is, if reading from the footnote, Joseph transferred the population from one city to the other to establish monarchy's undisputed ownership of the land and to demonstrate that individuals no longer had claim to their former property. Now that has an economic advantage, but says Rav Dessler, he had something else in mind. The Egyptians, in essence, became strangers in their own country. Every single one of them was relocated. They didn't live in their homes. They didn't live in their cities. They were literally exiled, and because they were disadvantaged in that way, that psychologically lightened the burden and the oppression that they forced upon the Hebrews, because we all know that one of the worst positions to be in is to be a stranger, to be a minority in a strange land, and the more the natives have the upper hand, the more prejudice and oppression there is to the newcomers. And Yosef alleviated that to a very large degree by mixing people up. So we see that he used his position in order to give his brethren as much of an advantage as possible, which lightened the load of the oppression, even though it got nevertheless it got very, very severe. But let's think about something else for a moment. How did Yosef get to this position? I mean, did he just rise through the ranks? Did he go through the political system and he was the best, the most persuasive candidate and people voted for him? Or how did he make it? How did he get to where he was?
Pharaoh's good wishes.
But come on, how did it happen?
The dream.
How did Esther become... How did Esther become the queen of Persia? Only because Hashem put them there. Yosef became the melech because Hashem put him into the position, and he arranged all these other machinations so that he could become that. Now, Rav Dessler says there's a rule in the world that God doesn't give away gifts like that for free. You know, a person can't expect supernatural rewards and benefits, to come to him for nothing. Rav Dessler maintains, especially in exile, Rav Dessler maintains that the reason why Yosef merited to rise to this position of power and influence and glory was only because he paid for it for the years prior of all of his hardships. and look at his life. Look at his life from the age of a teenager until he was 30. He had the the hardest life you could imagine. Hated by his brothers, banished by his brothers, wanted to be killed, sold to Egypt as a slave, working for Potiphar, being framed with Potiphar's wife, thrown into the slammer for 12 long years. Yosef paid for it. In other words, Yosef was preparing. Listen to this vision. Listen to this vision. He's not just any old Joe. Joe? Joseph? He's not just, he is preparing from the get-go, from the time he's a teenager, from the time he's dreaming, he is preparing for the benefit of his brothers. He's willing to endure all of this hardship just so that he knows God will give him something. You know, this is part of God's plan. You got to pay to get something supernatural like that. He's preparing for his brothers just to make their lives more bearable. This is who Yosef is. And this is Yosef's hachana. This is Yosef's preparation. Olam hazeh. Totally focused on Hashem and his hashkacha pratis. But olam hazeh. Let's get through this world and maintain our semblance of a Jewish nation. So we have Yaakov, the patriarch, who has transcended into the next world, but he has imparted within his children the ability to have at least that as their vision, at least in the periphery. And we have Yosef, on the other hand, who is continuing Yaakov's work as the man of truth in this world, to be able to see clearly through the darkness, preparing through his through his self-sacrifice and through his God-appointed position of power to work tirelessly to make sure that the Jewish people will have the best possible advantage. What's the aftermath of all this? Rav Dessler says, after everything, after all of Yaakov's gifts, after all of Yosef's gifts, things were still very, very bleak. We reopen up the Parsha Vayechi. The Rashi right away observes that if you look in the Torah scroll, the Parsha Vayechi doesn't have an opening margin. Mm-hmm. Every other Parsha in the Torah, with the exception of Bereishis, because that's at the beginning, there's a space before the new Parsha begins, except for Vayechi. Because as soon as Yaakov Avinu died, Nistemu Einehem V'Libam Shel Yisrael Mitzoras HaShibud Shizchilu L'Shabdam. When Yaakov died, the eyes and the hearts of Israel became closed because the servitude, the subjugation, began to affect them. Because, you know, Yaakov not there.
Watch over them.
There goes, you could understand this in the sense that without Yaakov's presence, the inspiration for the Jews to remain high spiritually started to fade. And yet Yosef was still alive, right? Another 60 years? And then at the beginning of Parsha Shemos, Hayaka Melech Chadash al Mitzrayim Asher Lo Yadas Yosef. Like new king arose over Egypt who did not know of Yosef. And as soon as Yosef was forgotten, and all of the great reputation and the great favor that the Jewish people had earned because of him, also started to fade. And so, you know, during that last period of, you know, 100 years or so, 140 years, things got really bad, and it affected the Jewish people physically and spiritually. And look at all the losses, look at all the casualties, and look how we barely made it out by the skin of our teeth. And as the sages say, we had sunk to the lowest level of tumah, of impurity, the 49th level. So even with all of Yaakov's preparations, and even with all of Yosef's preparations, they certainly gave us great strength and great advantage But Golus is dark, and Golus is foreboding, and there is really, there's no guarantees. I mean, there's a future, but the casualties and the effects can be debilitating. And so basically, Rav Dessler ends off with like kind of a hope and a plea. He says, first of all, we have to realize that it's only in the merit of our great tzaddikim that we can make it through galut, both in the spiritual sense and of all of the chesed and all of the concern that they are constantly pouring into the Jewish people and making inroads wherever possible. We have to realize that without them, we would be totally lost. Without those great people who have their mind focused on our destiny and on and have that Yisromamus HaNefesh, that exalted soul. But even besides that it comes to a point where each of us has to strengthen ourselves, because there was no easy answer. And Chizuk Gadol Nidrash, great strength is, of course, he's speaking about our exile, because what is the Egyptian exile if not the foreshadowing of the exiles that the Jewish people would be living in throughout the centuries? So his conclusion is, and this is really the end of his commentary on Parshas Bereishis, Sefer Bereishis, Chizuk Gadol Nidrash, a great strength is required, Sheyefshar Lanu Lotzeis Mitachas Hashpoas His lotzitzus yashkafos arachov. Great strength is needed in order to enable us to extract ourselves from the terrifically strong influence of scorning and the outlook of the streets. Nochin es ha'isarus de lotata shalonu. We've got to be like Yosef. We have to. Through self-sacrifice and through the hard work that Yosef endured in order to gain divine favor like Yosef gained, in order to merit the redemption from the Mitzrayim that we are in, so that Hashem can hurry up our geula, our redemption. That is really the what we have to take out of these parshios. We have to take out the recognition of the great tzaddikim and how where they are focused, and how they're focused on our destiny, but also on the rest of us. And we have to similarly be concerned with how our future generations and our communities are faring. And we have to be also single-mindedly focused on our present situation and how to get out of it. And that requires the types of deeds, the type of works that we find in both Yaakov and Yosef, both in spiritual sense as well as the worldly sense.
Hi.
Spoke of Miriam Laeris also in this. I've got to spoke of the 49th level. 49th level. If they had reached the 50th, no one would have. So, 20% of the people, by your thinking, were able to leave Egypt. The other 80%
made the cut.
Had descended so far that they were not permitted to leave. Is that?
They looked so much like the Egyptians.
Were they also affected?
Basically.
Oh, excuse me, were they also affected by the plague of the firstborn dying?
Well, guess what? They didn't make it to the plague of the firstborn. These 80% perished during the plague of darkness.
Oh.
And the reason why God did it that way was so that the Egyptians wouldn't see. And because if they would have seen, they would have woken up and they would have said, you know, this is not a plague from God against us. Everybody died, and God didn't want them to see that. So, basically, the way I look at it, we'll talk more about it in Mirtz Hashem in the Sefer Shemos, but the way I look at it, in order to leave Egypt, you had to be able to slaughter the Paschal Lamb in front of the Egyptians. What does that represent? That represents taking their deity and their lifestyle and their mishigas and being able to say to yourself and them unabashedly, this means nothing to me. I am hereby rejecting it totally. I'm going to slaughter it in front of your eyes. I don't care what you do to me. I don't care what you think. And I'm going to, I'm not going to do this in private. I'm going to put the blood on my door. And if you can, do that, then you're ready to leave Egypt. God eliminated those other 80% because God looks into the hearts and minds of every human being and can tell where a person is at. And he never takes away free choice as long as the person is alive. But he knows who's going to do that and who's. And rather than suffer the degradation of living and not doing the Korban Pesach, which these 80% God knew would not do, he took them away while they were still
innocent. Wasn't the taking of the lamb itself just before? I mean, tying it to your bedpost and all that. Didn't that happen just before the plague of darkness? So whoever wasn't even prepared to do that, I mean, that was
maybe.
I mean, they fell right after each other.
Maybe, yeah. That's interesting. I thought.
Now I have a question. Is Rav Dessler saying that through the time that Yosef was actually going through his difficult time with his brothers and then being sold down to Egypt and going through all that, he knew at that time he was paying for something big that was going to come on down the line?
Right. He's saying that as he endured all of that, he was thinking, this is my contribution of self-sacrifice in order to merit something very, very supernatural from God.
Well, he didn't jump into that pit. There's room in the pit.
No, he didn't choose to walk into any of this, but as it was happening to him.
Uh-huh.
That's why he never...
that's what kept his attitude.
Exactly. That's why he was not vengeful towards his brothers.
Uh-huh.
That's why when they, in Vayigash, when he reveals himself, they coil back and say, uh-oh, what are we going to say to you? And he calms them. He says, don't worry. You know, God sent me here.
What does that say about Yaakov? Because Yaakov, as soon as he found out that Joseph was dead, you know, I mean, he didn't think he was dead, but he mourned him. He was not in a very good frame of mind for that whole period of time. He did not look at it in that same way.
He did not know that Yaakov was that Yosef was alive.
Right, well, but he didn't give up warning either, which they say.
Yeah.
He didn't exactly accept he was dead either.
Mm-hmm.
So he saw it, but given, regardless of that, there was still a situation at hand.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems that, from what you're saying, that Yosef looked at it in a different, maybe a higher level than Yaakov did.
Well, again,
this is in preparation.
You know, if we say that Yaakov had really graduated from worldly concerns, you know, he said, this is, I'm not really answering the question.
I'm not sure it's answerable, but I think it's interesting that they seem to be looking at this from a very realistic, I'm going through this and I'll be out at the other end okay.
Mm-hmm. A parent losing a child is the worst thing.